You pressed play on this podcast with the click of curiosity. It is another dimension, a dimension of mind, a dimension where nothing is sacred and everything is explainable. You're streaming into a land of both inside and outside, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the midside.
Welcome to the midside, where if who you support decided who won the debate, then no one won. And let's be honest, we all lost. It may not have been as bad as the first debate, but we all lost. I'm your host, Justin M. Mozeski, and it's been an interesting week for me, an interesting week intellectually, an interesting week for me on Twitter, and that is one of the reasons this is going to be a solo episode. That's right, Midsiders. That's right. It's one of those episodes where rather than having segments and doing all the bumpers and the drops and all that and having a co-host, I just sort of talk about what's on my mind. Part of it's logistical. Christine is visiting this weekend. She's been, California all year while she transitions out of her job or tries to keep it working from a distance while moving to Florida. And while she does that, she visits sometimes. And this weekend, we're taking engagement pictures, all those things that, as a guy, at least for me, are the things you have to do to get married, not that you want to do. But you got to do what you got to do, which means have to rearrange the podcast schedule a little bit. But it worked out. It worked out because of what I have to talk about this week. And what I have to talk about is, since the pandemic, since COVID-19, since the lockdowns and everything, it's been really difficult for me to really get upset about anything beyond the masks and the lockdowns and everything. Part of it is moving to Florida and life being so good. Like, Christine and I went to Magic Kingdom the day before I recorded this, so it would have been Saturday. We went to Magic Kingdom. And you take the ferry across the man-made body of water, and you go into the giant park. You see the giant castle, and Liberty Square might be my favorite part of any Disney park ever. And you go there, and we had a nice meal. It was all you can eat at Liberty Square Tavern or Liberty Tree Tavern, Liberty Tree Tavern. And I said to her, I go, it's hard to be upset about life. Yeah, I'm not going to lie. Wearing masks at Disney sucks. And by the end of the day, we didn't stay the full day. The park was open 9 to 8. We did about like 10 to 4. And by the time we were done, I was over the masks. When you start sweating, when your lips start sweating and it's not from hot food, from spicy food, then you're just kind of over it. So yeah, the mask kind of sucked. But it's hard to be upset about life when you're on that ferry and you're looking around and you see not only that the ferry's man-made or not, the lake is man-made, right? The body of water is man-made. I assume it is. I mean, it theoretically could not be, right? It's Florida. There could have just been that body of water and they built everything around it. But even if the body of water is not man-made, you got the park on one side of it. You've got the entrance on the other side of it where the parking lot is. And then around it are the resorts, right? You got the Polynesian, the Grand Floridian, and you're looking at all this and you're like, wow. One man's vision, one man's genius made all of this happen. And it's hard to be upset about the world with that going on, with everything going on. It's hard to be upset about life when you live in that situation. So living here now, especially with the state that I think has handled the pandemic the best, at least the state that people want to live in that's handled the pandemic the best. I mean, arguably South Dakota has handled the pandemic the best. It's a whole other discussion, though. Living in that state, it's been hard to get upset about things. I mean, I could still be in California where they're still locked down and going to be locked down for the indefinite future. I mean, just go out there and look at the restrictions for Thanksgiving that Gavin Newsom declared. And that what I just said is exactly sort of where I want to go with this episode. It's ultimately a discussion of where is the line between talking about culture and politics, because we're so politically focused right now because of the election, and it's driving me insane. But that's the end. Let me go back to where I was, building up towards that. It's hard for me to get upset about things. Besides the masks and the lockdowns and all of the infringements upon freedom. The growth, the creeping growth of authoritarianism. But something happened this week within my little subset of the Snyder Cut movement, of the Snyder Cut fandom, of the Zack Snyder fandom, that hit that intersection of movie fandom and the pandemic. And it's something that's so completely irrational to me that I flew off the handle. I mean, I got angrier than I've been in a very, very long time. And I still haven't engaged in Twitter since. I haven't really engaged with the Snyder fandom, with the Snyder Cut fandom. I certainly haven't engaged with that group of people because it just a line was crossed for me. And it's a line that most people might not think is a line. But to me, it's so important because of everything that's going on in the world. And it's just, it was so extreme. So as we know, most industries are fucked right now, right? Most industries are being destroyed, right? Because you shut the economy down, you lock everyone down. It's hard for industries to survive, hard for any industries to survive, right? Pretty much the only thing that's probably doing okay is food because people need food, right? And, you know, essential goods or essential stores that sell essential goods like Walmart and Target, big box stores, right? They're probably doing decently. One of the places that's hurt the most is movie theaters, because that's a social event, right? Like it or not, it's a social event. You may disagree with me, but it's a social event, going out and seeing a movie with a group of other people. It's sort of like going to the gym, right? Going to the gym, believe it or not, is a social event. Even though you've got your headphones on, you're doing your own thing. Just being around other people who share that value and are sharing enjoyment in that moment. You're around other human beings who are enjoying something you enjoy, who are getting a value out of something you enjoy. And going to the movies is the same thing. And that's a large amount of the pleasure I get out of the movie. It's not just that I'm watching it on the big screen. That's certainly a lot of it, right? The technology of it. But as many people have pointed out, as our TV screens get bigger and more affordable, our sound systems get bigger and more affordable, you can have that technological experience at home, but you'll never be able to have the social experience at home. And that's exactly what COVID is attacking, right? COVID-19 is attacking this idea of we can't be social anymore because every other human being is an existential threat to us. Well, that's been a big hit to movie theaters. We haven't had any big blockbuster movies, except for one. Tenet. And this is where things went crazy for me. I've seen this groundswell recently of people on Twitter saying that Tenet flopping is Christopher Nolan's fault, because Christopher Nolan pushed the movie into theaters. Christopher Nolan pushed the movie into theaters, and because of that, it flopped. Now, I have two major problems with this. The first is more of a scientific, logical problem with this take, and that sort of upsets me on an intellectual level. And then the second is a philosophical take, and I'm upset on a values level, a virtues level, a what do we care about in life level. So the logical one is, what is a flop during a pandemic? What is a flop during a pandemic? How do you define that? How do you, in the middle of the pandemic, define what amount of money or what amount of respect a movie must make in order to not be considered a flop? And I ask that because I think people are judging it by financially pre-pandemic standards. Tenet has made $334 million worldwide. $334 million worldwide. And in the United States, it's made $50 million. According to Box Office Mojo, that makes it the third highest grossing movie of the year. The third highest grossing movie of the year. The number one grossing movie of the year is Bad Boys for Life, which came out. Or sorry, the number two is Bad Boys for Life, which came out January 17th. January 17th, that came out. I'm looking now because Sonic the Hedgehog is listed four, but I didn't. Sonic the Hedgehog came out in February. That's crazy to me. That's crazy to me that Sonic the Hedgehog came out in February. It feels like that movie was a long time ago. That tells you a lot about the year. But so Sonic the Hedgehog, an excellent movie, made $308 worldwide. How much would that have made if it came out in January? I don't know. How much more could Bad Boys have made with the pandemic? I don't know. That's part of the point, right? The number one movie, all right, so Bad Boys for Life has made $426 million worldwide, and it's made $206 domestically. So clearly that has a big bump based upon not being released during the pandemic. Same thing with Sonic the Hedgehog, right? If you look at for the number four movie, it came out February 14th, it says, and made $58 on its opening. That's more than Tenet's made its entire domestic run. So there's a big bump there, not pandemic, right? And then there's this other movie called The 800. From the acclaimed filmmaker behind Mr. Six comes a riveting war. 1937, 800 Chinese soldiers fight under siege from a warehouse in the middle of the Shanghai battlefield, completely surrounded by the Japanese army. So this seems like a Chinese movie. It says it was released August 28th and has made $327,000 in the U.S. Internationally, though, it's made $460 million, and it was released in China August 21st. And the majority of that money, the $460 million, comes from China. You know, there's like thousands of dollars, literally, in Australia, New Zealand, United Kingdom. So that's interesting in that sense, that China has the number one movie, and the majority of that money comes from China. That tells you a lot about the box office motivations in general, you know, pre-COVID and everything. But the point here is, Tenet was released September 3rd. Its opening weekend, it made $20 million in the U.S., and it's made 50 million overall domestically in the U.S. And then internationally, it's made $283 million. Now let's look. I'm interested. China. It's only made $29 million opening and $66 million in general. Is there anything for India here? Nothing in India. It's made $21 million in Japan. It's made $15 million in South Korea, $11 million in Russia. So there's something interesting here that Tenet didn't make that much in China, where there's a movie that came out right before it that's made $460 million in China. So there's something there. But that's not the conversation I'm interested in, right? The point is, we don't know if $334 million is a good number or not. We have no idea. To me, I look at, there's a pandemic where most movie theaters are closed. That seems pretty good to me. Just sort of, as they call in sports, they call it the eyeball test when you're judging a player. The eyeball test for me is $334 million seems pretty good. So on one hand, I'm like, it's intellectually dishonest to say that Nolan flopped, or to say that Tenet flopped, right? Let alone ascribe blame to anyone to say, oh, this movie flopped, right? So we're starting from there. We don't have enough information to say it flopped. If somebody asked me, did it flop? I don't know. 334 seems pretty good to me, but I don't know if it flopped. And then to ascribe blame to Nolan is where I have the problem, because I have to look at contextually why Nolan did it. If you remember, Tenet was originally supposed to come out in July, and Nolan didn't want to push it back. He refused. Every other movie in the world was being pushed back. I mean, Wonder Woman's been pushed back to December. right? Mulan got pushed to Disney Plus. Everything else is being pushed to the next year. I mean, Dune's got pushed back a year. I mean, everything's being pushed, right? But Nolan, he ended up only pushing it to September. Now, why? Why would Nolan do that? Well, we all know how much Nolan values the movie-going experience, the theatrical experience. We know how much he values that. And what is the one thing that Christopher Nolan can do to save the movie-going experience, to help it? Well, he can release one of his movies, right? He is an extremely successful filmmaker. His movies make a lot of money. They get a lot of people to go to the theater. In order to have people go to the theater, you can't just have them open. You have to have movies be released. So Christopher Nolan, in my mind, pushed to keep it released, to have it be released this year, to try and encourage people to go to the theaters and try and encourage other movies to open. Because if these movie theaters get no money ever, they're going to go out of business. Look, it's one of my favorite venues ever. One of the best parts about living in Anaheim was Chain Reaction. It's a very, very famous punk venue. A lot of pop punk bands play there. I saw a lot of pop punk bands play there. I saw Newfound Glory record their live album there. It's a very, very famous venue. It's an experience as a pop punk fan you should have. And I say that fully knowing they just almost closed recently. They posted recently on Instagram about how they were about to close, and a bunch of bands said, hey, no, we're going to help you. And now they're doing a bunch of fundraisers to keep that venue afloat while this pandemic's going on. Now, again, part of this issue is California's policies, right? Because if they could hold shows, even if they had half capacity, that would serve as the fundraisers. These bands would play, and maybe the bands would say, hey, we're not going to take a cut, so the venue can stay open in the meantime, and we can continue to play later on. That would be in all of their interest, right? To keep the venue open. Oh, you see what I just did there? I said the movie making, or not the movie, I said the music making not as much money would be worthwhile for the artists to play because they value the venue. This is the same artist who said, hey, you're going to close? Let's do fundraisers for you in order to keep you open because we value you so much. Is this no different than Christopher Nolan wanting to keep movie theaters open and saying, hey, put this movie in theaters? Yeah, it's not going to make a billion like my movies usually make. It's not going to make a billion. He has to know that going in, just like these bands would know if they played the venue at half capacity, it wouldn't make as much money. The show wouldn't make as much money. Christopher Nolan, in my mind, said the same thing. He said the same thing. He said, hey, I want movie theaters to stay open because they're a value and they're important to our lives. So I'm going to release my movie. And I have to believe that he is a smart guy. I know he's a smart guy. I'm not even going to say that. I know he's a smart guy. So I have to believe that he knew most theaters worldwide were closed. Most theaters in America are closed. He knows about the lockdowns. He's not an idiot. So his intent in pushing this movie out was not to make $1 billion, was not to have a hit movie. His intent was simply to give people a reason to go to the movies and to show that it's okay to go to the movies, especially with all the safety measures in place. As someone who saw Tenet in the theater and saw a couple other movies, I saw that movie Unhinged with Russell Crowe. And I saw the New Mutants, which was terrible, by the way. Both Unhinged and New Mutants were not good. But the experience, right? I enjoyed the experience. But seeing both of those, and I still have my AMC A-Lifts pass, and they're showing old movies. At some point, I'm going to start going to those old movies to support the theater. Even though I'm going to be paying, you know, $5 for popcorn, so I don't have to wear a mask because I can eat it. And even right now, they're charging me per month for that pass that I'm not using. I haven't used it since September. It's the end of October and I haven't used that pass again. I am okay with them charging me for that money because it will help something I value stay afloat. And I think Christopher Nolan sees that and he says, okay, I'm going to give people a reason to go. I'm going to show people it's okay. I'm going to show other filmmakers. I'm going to show other studios. This is what we have to do. If we're only looking at the bottom line, then we're not looking at reality. Because if the economy's down and everybody's making less money, well, then it becomes an issue of resources, right? If you normally have a budget of 50 to allocate to 50 things, you can give a dollar to each thing. But if you have a budget of 25 and you still have those same 50 things, you have to decide what you value. There is less money to give to movies right now because the economy as a whole is down. But Christopher Nolan was saying, hey, this is what I value. Let's give some money to it. Again, to the metaphor of chain reaction, to the metaphor of this venue. If it's able to open, bands could play it at half capacity, and they could even say, hey, let the venue keep all of the profits. We don't have to take our appearance fee that we usually take, however, you know, what percent of the gate we take, to let them continue to make money, to be able to pay their rent and utilities and stay in business, so later on we can still have this iconic venue to play. What's the point of Christopher Nolan making movies if later on there are no movie theaters? So I got really mad. I got really mad at saying it's Christopher Nolan's fault that Tenet flopped. Because that entire statement is just wrong on a logical level, a statistical level, a philosophical level. It's not even looking at the values that are actually at play. It's not even looking at the context that we're existing in. It's completely and utterly stupid. It's one of the dumbest things I've ever heard. And this is from people who are supposed to be big-time movie fans. Big-time movie fans. And the only responses were, well, Nolan should have known the theaters weren't going to open. Yes, he should have known that. You're right. I agree. I don't disagree with that premise. And I don't disagree with the idea that all of the theaters internationally were closed. That big markets like India, as we just saw going through that Chinese movie, as we just saw going through all those movies we were talking about on Box Office Mojos, none of them got any movie money from India. I agree completely. But first of all, in the history of the world, who is the country that led everyone in freedom? The United States of America. Where are the states that are leading people in freedom right now? I believe I'm living in one of them in Florida. Now, I'm not going to sit here and claim I'm a freedom fighter. I'm receiving the benefits of Florida to be able to go to the movie. Me going to the movie wasn't an act of protest. I'm receiving the benefits of moral people deciding not to do what Gavin Newsom's doing to California. And that allowed me to enjoy Tenet. And I also received the benefits of Christopher Nolan putting that movie in theaters. So in the middle of the pandemic, I'm not going as crazy. Because I can go to work every day. I can go to Disney. I can go to Universal. I can go to the gym. I can go see Tenet. Because of Christopher Nolan. And Christopher Nolan knows what he's doing. And I'm going to sit here and I'm going to have people telling me that it's his fault that it bombed, and we're going to ascribe negative emotions to this guy and a negative judgment to him. I mean, fuck off. Seriously. You can see how mad I'm already getting right now, just talking about this, and I have distance from it and everything. And it's this continuation of this. They call it a hot take culture, but there's just this contextless, disconnected, which is ironic because that's the entire point of the fucking internet, is connect people, approach to things that people have, especially on Twitter, just on social media in general, but especially on Twitter. It's just disconnected from any sort of understanding of actual reality. And it happened with, it's happening with the election, but it happened with two other things involved in the movie universe as well, the movie Twitter universe. I mean, there's the whole controversy about Chris Pratt. I don't know if anyone's seen this, where the Avengers did that event with, they sat down, that pro Joe Biden event, but Chris Pratt didn't go. So, of course, what did everyone start doing? A bunch of people started doing this whole cultural pressure thing we do in the year 2020. This whole cultural pressure thing where Chris Pratt must be evil and he must decry not only Donald Trump, but his church, because his church is homophobic. Now, apparently, I don't know. I'm not saying it, as I'm saying that's what they're claiming. His church is homophobic. So he must decry his church and decry Donald Trump. Otherwise, he's evil. And, you know, there have been rumors that Chris Pratt is conservative for a long time. I don't know. I have no idea what Chris Pratt is. I have no idea what he is. But the point is, if he is not a full-fledged, supporting, left-wing person, left-wing voter, Joe Biden voter, people see him as evil. Now, you know, the other side applies as well, where the extreme Trump supporters see that as well. Part of the reason I'm not voting. I don't want to get involved in this. I hate both of you equally. Anyone acting like this, I hate both of you equally. And you know what? If that makes me, you know, ostracized by everyone, so be it. So be it. But a bunch of, you know, Chris Pratt's co-stars came out and made social media posts supporting him, saying he doesn't like to make this stuff public. He doesn't like to make it public, and he's a great guy. He's a great guy. And which everyone said, oh my God. When everyone was attacking Brie Larson for what she was saying when Captain Marvel came out, nobody defended her. Well, okay, that was before she was in the movie with everyone else. And second of all, maybe there's personality differences there. I don't know. I'm sure they all have a reason for doing what they're doing. So they all came out, and they got attacked for it, right? How dare they? And this is what, you know, this is where I start building towards after hearing the really stupid things about Christopher Nolan, seeing all this social pressure about Chris Pratt. This is where I start building towards, where is the line between culture and politics? And, you know, where is the discussion, and where should the discussion ought to be? Because the final thing that really got to me, you know, it happened a couple weeks ago. I don't remember exactly when it happened, but it's relevant to all this. Zack Snyder released he tweeted out a political advertisement, not by either of the two campaigns, but a pro-Biden, anti-Trump video. And I say anti-Trump because it was saying, you know, what every political ad says, essentially, you know, Donald Trump said that all these things would happen and he would do all these things when he was elected and he didn't do them. Well, yeah, no shit. That's what every politician does, right? Every politician lies. And it was just saying, I'm voting. All these different Wisconsinites were saying, I'm voting for Biden because of this. And Snyder tweeted it with the hashtag vote with love and said, you know, as someone who's born in Wisconsin, this really hits home. Of course, the implication is he's voting for Biden, which sent shockwaves through the Snyder Cut fandom, right? Sent shockwaves through the Zack Snyder fandom. Why? Well, because all of the extreme far left people who think Zack Snyder is a social justice warrior and his movies support collectivism and social justice decided, oh, well, that's it. He clearly supports these things. He's clearly far left like we are. He's anti-Trump. Therefore, he's on our side, and fuck all the fans who aren't that. Now, notice I'm not just saying fuck the right-wing fans. I'm saying fuck all the fans who aren't that, right? And, of course, the right-wing fans got upset. Oh, man, I thought he was right-wing, blah, blah, blah. Oh, my God, I can't believe it. And so now there was all this infighting, and there continues to be all this infighting, and now there's this tension in the fandom where no one stepped back and said, why does Zack Snyder movies appeal to people on both sides of the aisle? I know. I've talked about it ad nauseum on the show, and I will continue to talk about it. Zack Snyder is not an objectivist, but he is neither right nor left. He takes things from both sides that are correct because he supports individualism and a rational approach to the world. Right? I think he's probably somewhere along the lines of the, you know, the objectivist Christian hybrid, right? Because he was raised as a Christian scientist, and I don't think he's given up belief in God completely. I wouldn't think he would because of all the imagery in there. I don't think he's given up the belief in Jesus Christ as the Son of God. That would just be my guess. I think he's probably somewhere along those lines. But that's the point. He's got that in there as well, which is a lot of what the right-wing people saw in there, right? The Christian right saw a lot of, oh my God, this is the Jesus myth. He's portraying the Jesus myth on screen. But a lot of it wasn't the typical Christian approach to it, right? It was Jesus more as a man than the Son of God. And that's where the objectivist angle comes in on it. I mean, there's an interview out there saying that his view of Superman, his conception is influenced by, the Randian Renaissance man. And we all know, anyone who knows anything about Ayn Rand knows she comes from an atheistic perspective. So he's coming from that perspective. You know, he has scenes about, like, the biggest religious scene in his Superman movies is that one in Man of Steel where it's about the leap of faith. But the leap of faith wasn't about putting trust in God. It was about putting trust in other humans to be good people, right? Just fundamentally, it was almost the way I would explain that is that's almost the benevolent life, the benevolent universe premise. Just that, if you're a good person, good being, you're living up to your values and wanting to be productive and valuing life, then believing that people in the world are going to respond rationally is that leap of faith. That's how I took that scene. But he's doing it through the Christian lens, right? And the right took that and they were like, oh my God, this is a parable about Jesus. But then the left did the same thing with the whole, oh, he's an immigrant. No doubt, he is an immigrant. And there's an immigrant motif in there. There's an immigrant motif in the way nowadays with our tribalism and our collectivism, we reject people. But also the idea that, and no one talks about this, he didn't simply come here and keep his culture and not integrate. If you look at the history of the 18th and 19th and 20th century, I really meant the 19th and 20th. I don't know why I said 18th. It's because I'm teaching the stuff from the 18th century in school. The 19th and 20th century, people came here and they integrated. They kept the best parts of their cultures and we made that part of our culture. I mean, pizza, hello, pizza. But they integrated. I mean, look at me, right? I'm Polish. I'm Italian. Most of my 3 of my 4 sets of grandparents came over in the mid 20th century, right? In like the 1940s. Where's my super Polish culture? I mean, I went to Poland and there were things I recognized in myself and identified with, but I'm not sitting here acting Polish all the time. Same thing with Italian. I'm not acting Italian all the time. Right? Because there was a level of integration. There was the melting pot. And that's certainly in there with Snyder's Superman. But the far left people only see it as, oh, well, he's an immigrant and he's being rejected because he's different because he's an immigrant. Yes, he is being rejected because he's different because he's an immigrant. But it's not just, oh, here's an immigrant, I reject him. It's because of the underlying collectivism and tribalism. And both sides don't see that. And now they're ironically engaging in this collectivist and tribal contentiousness with each other. Even though there are quotes from Snyder from his event saying, there's value in the other perspective and we need to see the other side of things. He answered this. He answered a social justice question pivoting away from this on purpose. Go back and look at that video of the panel after the Batman versus Superman showing where he talks about the question about the other. He directly addresses this point. Yet people on the far left still think that, oh, the immigrant motif means that he is a social justice warrior. Look, anyone who has any brains knows that and has any knowledge of the history of America that this country was founded by immigrants, and it's been immigrants coming here ever since who've added the best parts of their culture that have made this country grow stronger. But if you think it's because we continued to see them as immigrants, it's not. That's part of the problem. Where you reinforce, where you just steal a term from Karl Marx, honestly, where you reify the fact that they're immigrants, you only further push them apart. You push them further away from us. If you just see them as individuals and you say, hey, what do you have to offer? Let me show you the rational way of living we have here, not the American way of living. And that's another interesting question to me. I won't talk about it here, but I will raise it. Where's the line between patriotism and nationalism? Where's that line? If you show, these new people who have come to this country and want to live in the lifestyle and say, here's how we live. Here's the principles we're founded upon. what are the good things that you have to offer that we can make part of that? Well, then you can have a conversation. Then you can have a conversation. But if people come here and they keep the same culture that failed, that becomes a problem as well. And that's in Man of Steel and Batman versus Superman as well. You can't simply, Superman couldn't simply come here and reenact Kryptonian culture. That's very much in Man of Steel with the battle with Zod, right? Zod was trying to reenact the failures of Kryptonian's collectivistic culture. He was trying to do that, this platonic idea, right? I mean, young Clark is shown reading Plato's The Republic. He had to understand that culture he came from in order to see the ways in which it works and which it doesn't. And, you know, we see that even in Batman versus Superman with the platonic underpinnings of it, right? Where we see that even Bruce Wayne is acting almost Kryptonian in Batman versus Superman, where he's coming at things from a platonic perspective, where he's the one who has to decide what's right and wrong. He's the one who has to decide who the good people and the bad people are. We see that. So the point I'm getting at here is both sides decided Snyder was on their side. And because of that, they divided everything politically and they oversimplified everything because they're taking politics as the primary. Look, it's very obvious Zack Snyder wasn't going to vote for Donald Trump. I mean, in that interview he gave with comic book debate, he said, like, it's time for a new president. It's time for a new president so we don't take things so seriously anymore. Right? And he made the point that, you know, Ayn Rand's views are more acceptable when there's a left-wing candidate in office, right? When there's a left-wing politician in office, when there's a left-wing president, when the left has control. So even from a purely pragmatic standpoint, he could be voting for Biden just so he could make the fountainhead, because he knows it's going to be easier for him to make the fountainhead in 2 years from now if there's a Democrat in office. Well, I don't even think it's that, though. I mean, he flat out said Ayn Rand would call Reagan a nationalist and would call Trump a nationalist. And there are legitimate concerns with Donald Trump if you come from an anti-collectivistic standpoint. I mean, that's why I'm not voting for Donald Trump. It's one of the reasons I'm not voting for Donald Trump, right? I mean, I share his misgivings. I also share them about Trump. But if you have the assessment of these are the two choices and I have to pick one, then I can understand voting for Biden. Again, I can understand people voting for Trump as well. I get it because I think they're both bad and I get the arguments against both of them. So if you feel like, if you think that you have to pick between the two, I get voting for either of them. I understand it. I get where both people are coming from. But that's also why, another reason why I'm not voting. If I can understand where both sides are coming from, with the other side being bad, that just means the whole fucking thing is just fucked, right? That means they are objectively both bad, and no one's voting for anything worthwhile. That's what that means to me. And I'm just taking a long-term perspective, because I know people who are voting for Jo Jorgensen as well. But I can't vote for her because of the comment she made about we must be actively anti-racist, right? Which is ironic because in ways I am actively anti-racist. In my classroom, if people bring up race in a negative sense, if they're not discussing it in an honest way like we do on this show, or in a non-collectivistic way, like I said, I mean, it talked about an episode with Trailer Takedown Dan. I will never tell someone that their race isn't part of their identity. I won't. That's their experience. I want to hear about their individual experience. And if your individual experience is relevant to your race, then I want to hear that. But I don't want to hear about the quote unquote black experience. I don't want to hear about the Hispanic experience. I don't want to hear about the Filipino experience, right? I want to hear about your individual experience with your race. That's a fine discussion to have about race. But like, if somebody's like, hey, white boy in my class, and that happened once, I'll say, if you bring up race again, you're not allowed in my classroom ever again. I am actively anti-racist in that way, but I'm actively anti-racist in the way individuals deal with each other. And I'm actively anti-racist in the way of being against collectivism. That's the way in which I am actively anti-racist. The problem I have with what Jo Jorgensen said is this whole rhetoric of we must be actively anti-racist implies a systemic thing. that the system's the problem, that we have to look at the system and we have to look at groups and figure it out that way and use government to socially engineer. How can I use, or how can I vote for a libertarian, even if she went to Clemson, who's using the rhetoric of people who want to socially engineer via government, who want to socially engineer society in general? I don't want to socially engineer society. I've been very clear about that. And this is where my whole problem comes in. I agree. Being anti-racist is good. Being pro-individualist is good. And that's another discussion too, right? The shading of it. I'm pro-individualism. I'm not anti-racist, right? I'm against racism because it's not individualism. It's a threat to individualism. So that's a whole other discussion. But my point is, are politics even worth discussing anymore? And I mean that in the sense of me not voting, me becoming a teacher. I'm making these choices because we ended up here because of a long-term philosophical battle. Long-term philosophical battle that we're losing. And this is the result of it. So pragmatically voting now and picking between the two candidates as if that's going to fix anything is just fooling yourself. And is it the same thing when you have these political discussions? When you have these political discussions, are you doing anything except making yourself feel good? Are you being actually productive intellectually? And that's the question for me, is how do you be productive intellectually? Is it productive intellectually? I know that I became a teacher, so people can start understanding how to think. Students can start being shown how to think. Are there a lot of things I don't like about the teaching, or are there a lot of problems with the system? Yes, 100%. But I feel like I am promoting my values the best possible way. You know, I just started. Maybe I won't feel this way in 5 to 10 years. We'll see. But I feel like I am promoting my values the best possible way. I'm not actively in there preaching. I would never do that. My values are people thinking rationally and independently. And if I can teach them how to do that, then I think the culture will be better in the long term. And so maybe I have to be the first person on the front lines. That's the point we're at in our society. But politics. Is it even worth talking about Biden versus Trump anymore? Is it even worth talking about the left versus the right? If you remember, James left the show because he didn't want to talk about politics. And look, I was very sympathetic towards him. I agreed with his arguments. But where's the line? This is the problem I have. Here's the ultimate question of this show that I would love to hear from you midsiders about. Where's the line? Where is the line? You know, it's really tough right now because all of the news is either COVID or the election. Now, with COVID, there's a lot more cultural stuff to me. With all the riots and the protests, there's a lot more cultural stuff to me. But in general, when we're discussing the news, and this is where this show, it really impacts the show, is where is the line? Where is the line, Midsiders? Because I'm going to be honest with you, I'm done. Not with the show. I'm done caring about, oh, Christopher Nolan, it's his fault. It flopped. It's his fault. Tenet flopped. I'm done even engaging, entertaining these ideas. It's so fucking stupid. I'm done with, oh man, Snyder, blah, blah, blah. He's clearly a social justice warrior. He's so far left, blah, blah. I'm done with these obviously stupid positions. Now, movie-wise, I can have these discussions and I can continue to go in that direction. But those takes apply to the culture as well. Where is the line with the news? And that's basically the question I'm left with, and basically what I'm considering going forward is, what does this show look like post-election? What does this show look like in 2021? We'll continue through the rest of this year in the way we've been doing it with the news and everything. We definitely need to bring back the Hopeful Romantic more. I need to start watching older stuff and start giving reviews and conversations about that. just simply need to start doing that, because we definitely have something different to offer in the movie conversation space, in the entertainment conversation space. Part of it has been logistics. I mean, honestly, on my part, I'm very busy, and it's been difficult for me to find time to watch stuff. So an easy excuse was just to say, oh, it's the pandemic, we're not going to do The Hopeful Romantic. I need to make more of a commitment towards that. I do. But now that I'm back at the gym and I'm getting more of a schedule, I should be able to do that. So we'll definitely have The Hopeful Romantic going forward. But do I want to just pivot to that kind of show? No, I think that's too simplistic, and I think it's too disintegrated. I think if you're going to have a holistic life, and if you saw my interview with Liberty Unlocked, with Don Watkins, Liberty Unlocked, I think that you'll see that it's important to show an integrated life. And part of the reason for starting this show was to say, hey, there's this sort of lifestyle where all of this is going on. Here's the lifestyle I live. I want to show you guys what it's like to live like this. And obviously, I mean, if you listen to the show enough, you know that that's Life on the Midside. And that was always the intent of Life on the Midside. I always wanted it to be interactive. And I wanted your questions and your thoughts. And I could give thoughts on that. You know, that's one of the things I think is why Adam and Dr. Drew have been so successful with their show. And why they've developed such the perspective they have. Because if you take their two perspectives and see the kind of questions they always answered on Loveline, both on the radio and MTV, I think that they necessarily had to have an integrated perspective. And I think that's why they're so rational nowadays. And, you know, they still do talk about news a little bit. But maybe rather than talking about individual news stories, it's just talking about what's culturally trending. And it's not to read specific stories, but it's just, you know, two segments. Life on the Midside, we were talking about what's going on in life. You know, what are you thinking about? What's affecting you? What do you see in the world? What are you hearing from people? And it can be specific news stories or, you know, topics that are in the news and thoughts about them, rather than, you know, oh, this specific person said this specific thing, and then The Hopeful Romantic. But Life on the Midside also has to be, hey, what's going on with you? Like at the top of the show, William also often very much says very interesting things about running his business, and this is what he has going on with his dog and things like that. And I think we can mine topics like that rather than when he introduces, you know, and he says those things very briefly. Maybe we could go into that on a more detailed level. To me, that's what I'm finding much more interesting. That's what I'm finding much more interesting. So that's where my thoughts are at. That's been my whole experience this past week. You know, as you can see, I sort of did that with this episode right there. Politics were involved in this episode. You know, it's hard. We live in a world where, you know, Biden and Trump and the election are going on. It's hard to ignore these things. And other people are talking about these things. So, again, you can't have a contextless conversation, a contextless reflection on life without bringing up these things. But it wasn't the primary thrust of this. It wasn't about politics. It was about life. It was about culture. So you see how I kind of even did it in this episode. So that's sort of where my head's at. I'd love to know what you guys think. If you want to, you know, hit me up on Twitter, what you think about that. I think I'm going to change the way I'm tweeting as well. I've been thinking about that as well, kind of taking this approach to Twitter as well. So, you know, hit me up on Twitter. You can hit me up on Instagram. Let me know what you think of this. Facebook. I don't really use Facebook, but Facebook Messenger, I respond to people on. Discord's always there. You know, I've said it a billion times, always plugged on the show. Go to themidside.com, clip on any episode. There's a link to join our Discord or themidside.com/podcast. You can do that. I'm not going to plug anything this episode. You guys know Patreon, locals, you know all that. You know how to find it. If not, again, you can hit me up and you can ask. But the main thing I'm asking right now is just, what do you guys think of everything I said in this episode? How would you like to see the show continue going forward? What do you think the best way to make this show the best it can be and grow its audience? Because I think even more than ever, the midside is important. The midside, I think, is even more important than it's ever been. Witnessing the farce is even more important than it's ever been. How do we bring that to other people? And with that, this concludes your journey into the midside. I'm Justin Emblesnesky, reminding you that if things get tough, take a step back and witness the farce.